Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is poet, educator, translator, and teaching artist, Bertha Rogers. Rogers was named the first poet laureate of Delaware County, New York in 2005. She is a co-founder of Bright Hill Press and Literary Center of the Catskills. Her work has appeared in many journals, such as Many Mountains Moving and the Connecticut Review. She is author of several collections of poetry, including the award-winning House of Corners. Her most recent books are her translation, Uncommon Creatures, the Anglo-Saxon Riddle Poems from the Exeter Book, and a collection of really beautiful poetry called Wild Again. It was published this year by Salmon Press. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you back. Now, the new collection, Wild Again, is about nature as a family of connections to me. Talk to us about what your theme is.
I think it is. I've lived in the Catskills for 30 years now. And I've had lots of opportunity to pay attention. And I always think of Pablo Neruda and Elizabeth Bishop, people like that who really look carefully at things. And that's what I've done. And I just feel more and more that everything is connected.
Mm. Yeah, well, look, it certainly comes through in this book. And then, you know what, the poems also feel very spiritual. Have you gone through, or are you in some kind of a spiritual space right now?
I've gone through being deeply religious from when I was a kid and then when I got older. And I'm not connected with any established religion mm-hmm, right now. Mm-hmm. But I really feel connected to the world, to nature.
Yeah. Well, it definitely comes out in this book. You know what? I'm curious about the title "Wild Again." It suggests that perhaps you've retreated from the wild, and have come back to this essence of the world. What is it about?
Well, Bright Hill Press and Literary Center was founded in 1992, and running an organization, a not-for-profit like that, takes a lot of organization, and. So you have to really focus, as you know, on the running of the organization. So when I got back, when I left the organization as a full-time director in 2017, in a way it was like this weight lifted that I could be who I was again. So, and then there were things that, you know, there are things that happened. Like 2 months ago, in March, we had an unusual snow. I shouldn't say unusual.
Yeah.
We had a snow. And I walked outside and I saw these great big paw prints. And I said, oh, at last a bear. And this bear had come walking out of the woods and through my yard and taken the suet feeders down.
Oh, my God.
And I think he or she was just on the way elsewhere. But it was like a dream come true.
Wow. Did you have your camera ready?
I took pictures of the prints because evidently the bear came at night or something, so I didn't get to see the bear.
Wow.
But I've seen bears in the woods when I've been hiking in the past, and that kind of experience never goes away. It's like your heart stops and you could die right then. I mean, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the cover of the book is a photograph that has been adapted, but it was actually a fissure in one of the maple trees 70 feet up. My dogs had apparently treed it, and he stayed in the tree all day long, waited till we went in at night. And fissures were practically extinct in this country because they were hunted for fur. And they've come back big time.
So Wild Again came from all these different circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to have you read an excerpt from Wild Again. This one's called Copper Beech Trees. Tell us a bit about it before you start.
Well, the copper beech is a beautiful tree that doesn't lose all of its leaves in the winter. And there are these beautiful serrated leaves, and they turn this incredibly transparent sort of brown, and they stand out against the black trunk of the tree and the snow. So they never quite lose their leaves like all the other trees do. And I've heard farmers, they just volunteer wherever. And I've heard farmers say, you know, they're nothing but weeds, but they're beautiful trees.
Let's listen to the poem.
Okay. Leaves arc like paintings of blown leaves, like cut paper, like sunset strewn across red-gold sky, like smoldering fires, serrate-edged, notched like some knives. But they cut only the hard wind, the wind that tries to bridge them. Wind can't. These trees are too feisty. They do not hide in niches or ditches. They flaunt. They claim rough edges. Farmers name beeches weeds. They push through field soil. Their roots patiently wait, shove worker-laid stones, open faces. December disrupts, beats black branches, feathered, fingered twigs. They're like pens writing winter's aggregate history. Black barriers, hinged nodes above snow, hanging on against blizzard breath, hanging on all the scarred, bleak season.
Wow. I love that.
Thank
it's
you.
So vivid. And I want to bring this up, too, because you're a working artist. So I was wondering how your art intersects with the poetry, because your poetry is very visual.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the art comes first. Sometimes the poem comes first. And sometimes I'll just work for a few months on poetry, or I'll work for a few months on the visual art. I love what the Masters of Illumination did back in medieval times. And they were mostly monks working in monasteries. But the idea that they did conflate those so the words and images work together, the funny little stories in the margins. And I always see that as sort of a goal for me, to have the words and the images work together.
Yeah, well, it seems like you are reaching that goal, because this is it's a really beautiful visual book.
Thank you.
It really is. Now, you know, a lot of these poems feel like they're either from memory or from you actually experiencing nature in real time. How do you work with this kind of thing? Are you using memory?
Sometimes. Or sometimes a poem will begin with an image, something I've seen, and then, as poets do, with that leap, it calls to mind something else. And so it comes into the poem, the memory as well as the immediacy.
But do you ever walk in the forest like Walt Whitman used to and actually be inspired in real time?
Yeah, I do, actually. When I first moved up to the Catskills from the city, I determined to plant trees. And a few months after I moved up on a Mother's Day weekend, my kids and some friends came, and we planted 1,000 spruces.
Wow.
They were about 12 inches high, about a foot high, tiny little things, from the state nursery. And now I have a 70 to 100-foot forest. I have a forest.
You created something magical. Wow.
Yes, yeah. Wow. I have a poem in the book, too, about black walnuts, and I planted 100 black walnut trees, too.
So you're actually planting your inspiration, right?
Yeah. And it's wonderful to walk in the woods, because it's a whole different ecosystem. You know?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I want to have you read another excerpt from Wild again. This is called Season. Tell us a bit about it.
Season was once again, it's very much an immediate poem. It's talking about the garden and talking about what happens from one season to another. So I'll just read it if that's okay. Last summer, every tomato vine birthed her own offspring. deer stepped amid the green, low moon lighting their tract, hooves embossing earth. Blunt teeth bit into the fat red globes, each fruit a present complete. Cauliflower blossomed beyond green buds, blew up to yellow, and lost her name to autumn's hurled leaves, hard wind. The deer glutted, content, wind-rousing fur, raised russet heads, spun back into black woods. And then the moon made off, its wide bowl depleted. Winter happened. White drifts austere, yet blooming in cold's cramped fingers. By and by, they all slept.
Wow, I love that ending. I love poems with powerful endings.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And the by and by is like it's sort of like a nursery rhyme in a way.
Yeah, it definitely works. You live in a farmhouse, right?
Yes.
Well, tell me how the farmhouse has captured your imagination and helped you to be a writer.
Well, the farmhouse is, when I came up here, I looked at one place, really. I knew immediately that was the place. And it was an old prairie four square. And it turned out I didn't know till later, because the man who'd grown up in that house told me. It was a kit house. The original farmhouse, built in 1840, had burned down in 1921, and the family sent away in Rural New Yorker magazine.
Wow.
For a mail order house. And what was really odd was that it wasn't a Sears kit house. It was made by a little company in Davenport, Iowa, and I'm from Iowa. And it was called the Gordon Van Tine Company.
Wow, meant to be.
Meant to be. Isn't that weird?
And it inspires you to live, you know, somewhat secluded.
Right. And in the Midwest, there are prairie four squares everywhere. So I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't make the connection. I realized it later. Oh, I went home.
Wow. You know, doesn't it seem to you, after all these years of being a writer, that you do need to have that peace and quiet? I don't know how people can write while they're wandering around, traveling, and constantly involved in outer worldly things.
Yeah, the peace and, to focus. Because you can get an idea, you can scribble it down, but to really develop it, I think you need the peace and quiet.
Yeah, and then so many people are afraid of that, I suspect.
I mean, I have many days where the radio doesn't go on, nothing's on all day. And I realize at the end of the day, it's just been quiet all day.
Wow. Yeah, that's really something to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, it's a gift.
Let's talk a little bit about the fact that you were named Poet Laureate of Delaware County in 2005. How did that role shape you as a writer?
It sort of blended in with what I was already doing with Bright Hill Press, because I do a lot of outreach and do a lot of readings, and people ask me to do readings. And last night, for instance, in Treadwell, we had a program where the kids who were writing and who won awards in the district and the state Federation of Women's Clubs, they got their awards. So this was held at Bright Hill Center. And so all of it just sort of mixes in, really.
If you're just joining us, my guest is poet, educator, translator, and teaching artist Bertha Rogers. We're talking about her new book of poetry called Wild Again. Now, tell us a little bit about Bright Hill Press. I am very curious about how this great literary institution evolved.
Well, my husband and I each had moved up here, and we'd met up here in Oneonta at a reading, actually, that I was giving. And I had moved up here in 1989, and I was missing readings because I used to go to readings regularly in the city and participate in readings. And there wasn't a regular program of readings anywhere. So, you know, we talked about it, and I sent a press release to the local paper. And we did this in January, and 6 people showed up.
Wow.
To the farmhouse. And so that program, Word Thursdays, is still running.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those original 6 people are still coming. It's really
magnificent.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And so the program, it developed to festivals and publishing poetry and the kids programs, which is my favorite. I love the kids. So it just, it sort of grew like things do. It was an evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
It seemed like when something was needed, something came.
Yeah. So. And it sounded like it was in many ways orchestrated by what the community wanted.
Right.
Which is really rare nowadays.
Yeah, that's interesting. And we were in our house for the first 10 years. And in 2002, we were able, with some funding, to buy an old house in Treadwell, which is a hamlet. And in 2004, we got a capital grant from the state, and we built this incredible library, this beautiful library.
Mm.
And what was the original garage is now the education wing. So over the years, things have been done, and there's an adult poetry workshop that's going on right now. It seems that as things are needed, they're provided.
Yeah, and it's very deliberate and well thought out, it sounds like. Now, I want to have you read another excerpt from Wild again. This one's called Compensation.
Okay. Because you and I will never be bird, because we will never, glancing downward, lift furled arms, invent wings, never tuck taloned pins under feathered tail, nor feel the slipstream against flensed eyes, nor know the close admiration of sun against clouds' supple surfaces, the safety of plumes in rain. We must cultivate a quiet contentment, be pleased to bask in each other's riffling gaze, tease each other's hands with opulence. We must adore the feel of foot on soil, slow satisfaction of gravity, touch of lips to lips, not yet the beak's sharp steel.
That one's really quite amazing. Is it a kind of a love poem?
This is definitely a love poem to my husband.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the poem is dedicated to him. He died 3 years ago.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about this, too. I know you're interested in inclusion and cultural diversity and so on. How do you approach that as somebody who's part of the community?
Well, Delaware County is as big as Rhode Island and only has about 48,000 people. And it is 97% white. So inclusion is an interesting thing in a place like that. And diversity is an interesting thing. So what you work on is cultural diversity. And what you hope to draw in people on another level, since you don't have the diverse, you know, physical community. It's always been my goal that the organization would be available to everybody who wanted it to be available. And I think we've been pretty successful in that.
So you don't have any age limits and people don't have to have degrees in literature?
No. They're old people, young people. The youngest are about 5 and the oldest 90s.
That's great. Yeah. It encompasses the whole community, it sounds like.
Yeah, and we work whenever possible with Treadwell Community Improvement Club. They do programs. We work with them. We make the facility available to people who need it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Well, what a great gift to the community you've given.
Well, it was a gift for me, too.
Yeah,
I go to the functions, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, And another book you published just this year is called Uncommon Creatures. Tell us about it. It's a book you translated. To tell us about the theme. And
well, years ago in New York, a friend of mine who's a poet, and we used to go to this place called the Coffee House, which was in part of an old church on the Upper West Side. And they had an open mic, and we would read in it, and we got to talking. He was a scholar, and we got to talking. We decided we wanted to do a performance of Beowulf. And then we said, well, I think one of us said that I would translate it. And so I started studying Beowulf, and we ended up doing a performance of the first part of Beowulf up to the death of Grendel the monster. And it was wonderful. We had a great time, and I became totally addicted to the Anglo-Saxon language, which is a Germanic language. Uh-huh. And when I was translating, what I wanted to get was the rhythm of it mostly. And so I would ride around Manhattan on my bicycle with my Walkman, listening to this great Cædmon recording by Kent Malone, who was a great Beowulf scholar. Mm. Because I figured if I could get the rhythm, the rest would come. So I got really familiar with it. And I've been told by many people and reviewers that I really got the rhythm, so I did.
Wow,
anyway.
That's quite amazing, Bertha.
And then when I finished with it, I was missing the Anglo-Saxon so much because Beowulf was published in 2000. And I was missing it, so I thought I would look for something else and found the 95 riddle poems from the Exeter book. Those were bequeathed to Exeter Cathedral by Bishop Leofric, and I think it was 1072. Mm-hmm. And there is a book, and it's still there. And the monks most likely collected the riddle poems because the people were illiterate. This was around 1,000, and they were illiterate, so the monks would have collected them in much the same way the Grimm's brothers collected the fairy tales.
Ah, okay. I want to have you read before we run out of time from Uncommon Creatures. This is Riddle 29.
Okay. I saw a rare and wondrous creature. She abducted light, bounteous treasure, in a war fight. The light was a beacon captured, burgeoning between sickle horns, then carried to a glister castle she would build, night bower all aglow, mysterious, adorned. Then over the eastern roof came a marvel known well to earth dwellers. He took to his breast the treasure hoard and sent to her bed, deprived of power, the hapless marauder. Heart weak, the creature sadly rambled west. Dust flared up to heaven, dew fell to earth, night moved on. Nor could any man say, after she departed, where that lustrous wonder roamed.
Wow. That must have been absolutely magical for you to be translating this.
It was. They're masters of metaphor, first of all, masters of alliteration, and it was thrilling. I miss it.
You have it here for everyone to read to you.
And that was the answer, by the way, is the sun and the moon.
Do you have set times for writing? I know you're a really busy woman, and how do you navigate writing and all the activity that you're doing?
I usually early morning's best for me. I'm sharpest early in the morning, and so if I'm starting something, if it's a new something, chances are early morning's better. Later in the day, I can work on revising, editing, things like that. But the beginnings are best in the morning for me.
Uh-huh. And then do you have set times or do you
jump
out of bed going, oh, here's a line?
No, I jump out of bed and the dogs are hungry.
So you have set times when you're trying to write.
No, I don't. I just, you know, I usually work in the morning. But I do not have set times, no.
But it's usually in the morning.
Yeah.
If there is ever a time that you...
Yeah.
I see. Tell me what poetry has meant to your life, how it's enriched your life.
Well, I always loved poetry. And I remember there was a series of four books. My sister was the last person in the family. She was a year older than me. To go to country school. And the country schools were stopped and there were consolidated schools by the time I came to kindergarten. But they sold the schools and had auctions with the books. And my parents, we lived on a farm, bought a bookcase full of books. And so there was a set of four called Voices of Verse. And I remember being introduced to the Robert Louis Stevenson poems, you know, when I was sick and lay abed.
Oh,
and
yes,
those
yes.
Wonderful poems. And I really loved them, loved the rhythm of them. And then by the time I was 12, I was very religious. I was writing religious poetry. It's all gone. I have nowhere, you know.
Where did the religious affections come from?
We always went to church and everything in my family, but my best friend was a Baptist. We were Methodist. She was a Baptist, and I think she influenced me. In fact, one summer, we memorized 500 Bible verses to get a scholarship to this Bible camp. I'm not kidding.
My goodness.
So I really knew the Bible. It's interesting now because children don't know the Bible as well as, you know, they knew. Children used to know the Noah's Ark story, for instance. A lot of kids don't even know that story anymore, which is very interesting.
It's being lost.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Bertha, we are almost out of time. Is there any place that anybody can hear you read in the summer coming up?
I'm reading actually at Bright Hill Word Thursdays on June 27th. And I'm reading at June 22nd at the Liberty Bookstore in Hobart, New York. So I am doing some readings around.
Good. Yeah. So people will be able to catch you. Also, contact information or a website that people can...
Yeah, there's berthorogers.com is my website. And for information on the Bright Hill readings, that's brighthillpress.org. And they could find out what they need there.
Okay. Well, Bertha Rogers, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a really great pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you,
and,
Tish.
And again, Bertha Rogers has been my guest, and her book is called Wild Again. Go out and buy it. Thank you, Bertha.
Thank you so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.